Twitter.com/KPFT, Facebook.com/KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to tonight's edition of Technology Bites.
Well, we are having internet issues. Imagine that. They told me that this week it would be better. But
who
they
told
lied.
You?
They
who
lied.
You?
Oh, you know, the hippies that run the network here.
My browser says resolving host. I don't know which one of you it's working on, but one of the hosts.
Well, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
Inflicted.
Okay. I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Ruhaus.
We're going to get Peter on the show here as soon as we establish some
I got on Wi-Fi and got connected.
I did too.
But then I turned that off to flip to a hardwired connection, and I'm not getting anything.
Yeah.
Inflicted must have broken it.
I'm sure.
It's the only explanation.
Hmm. Only explanation you could find?
It was like that when I got here. Found it like that.
I really want to know who runs Cucaracha Hidey Hole.
There's a Wi-Fi hotspot that's within good range of here called Cucaracha Hidey Hole. And it's password protected, although you could probably... Can you...
I'm not going to mess with the Cucarachas on that. No? Oh, we could probably get in, but... You know, that's someone else's Wi-Fi.
All the KPFT Wi-Fis are gone.
Yeah, I can't get into anything.
All right. Well, we're going to still do the show, so thank goodness for that.
Do the phones work? I better check.
Remains to be seen, but I hope that they do. We need the phones. All right. Well, this is Technology Bites, your weekly computer call-in show. We're usually problem-free. you know, at least one show out of the year for the last 20 years. There's been one perfect show. But other than that, we have our share of problems. It's okay. Because that's why we're here. Because when it comes to technology and computers, who doesn't have problems? We all have problems. Sometimes we don't need our problems solved. We just need somebody to listen to the fact that we have a problem. And you can do that here with Technology Bites on the air at 100,000 watts in the fourth largest city in the nation. You can tell everybody that your technology is broken or that you don't know what to do. You know, we'll talk about that for a little while. Right now, our technology is broken, and we're telling you at 100,000 watts in the fourth largest city in the nation because our internet is
We know what to do, though. We got this.
We got this.
We've been here before.
You know, usually during the course of the show, we can fix our problems before the show's actually over, sometimes just barely. Man, so all the KPFT Wi-Fis are gone. Now I'm going to connect to the Xfinity free Wi-Fi and see what happens. But it looks like we may not have a Peter because we have no internets.
No
like
Peter?
It's all gone.
No news.
All right, so visit us online. If your internet works, you can go to our website at geekradio.com. We're also hanging out when our internet works at irc.cuckoo.com and the channel Tech Bytes. irc.cuckoo.com. Use your own
Cuckoo
IRC client if you like, or you can use our webpage. And we have a Java IRC client that'll join you right into the channel, right there. I guess I could turn my phone hotspot on, but I don't have much battery life in my phone.
Yeah, same spot. You don't have a cable, do you?
No.
Click it.
But I do in the car, but it's an iPhone cable. I didn't.
Yeah.
So we're going to see what happens. Who knows what will happen? We don't know what will happen. Also, we have a geek gathering coming up this Friday night at Cone's. Beer, Wine, and Darts. Apparently there's going to be an art show there as well. But we'll be there as well.
Oh, Dwight.
Well, oh, yeah,
there'll
cheese.
Be a sampling cheese. Of cheese.
Eat cheese. Bring the cats. You can come out to the Geek Gathering on Friday. All the information about the Geek Gathering is at geekradio.com. Yeah. All right. So, looks like we're going to struggle for a while with our internet. And we may not be able to get Pete here. So, what we'd like to do is open up the phones. And if you want to be on the air with us tonight, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. Groovehouse is standing by, ready to take your call.
We invite you to call.
He does invite you to call. I have a feeling that the Xfinity Wi-Fi that's available here, the public Wi-Fi, Xfinity Wi-Fi, is also part of the internet that we have.
I think it's hanging
which
off.
Which is also not working.
Sad trombone.
The internet is broken.
All right, so 713-526-KPFT. If you want to be on the air, we're going to have to go to the calls a little bit sooner than we normally do because we don't have Peter Hughes, and that means we don't have an info shot.
Part of it's getting fixed. So I think right at 8:20, like a week ago when we were on the air last week, is when the first little bit of exploit code for the Shellshock vulnerability came out. So it's been out there for about a week, and only in the last couple of days have Linux vendors and Apple actually gotten up and gotten working patches for it. The first couple of rounds of Linux patches actually didn't fix anything.
Really?
Yeah. So we spent most of the first, I guess, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday patching everything. And it patched like one of the tests to get it to pass the test, but it didn't actually solve a lot of the root problems. So more patches came out, and it was a very long weekend for a lot of people in information security. Just system administration, because it wasn't like, you know, like fun, cool InfoSec work. It was, you know, it was grunt sysadmin work for the most part.
So how much patching were you doing?
Once the patches started to fail, we went ahead. So the whole thing with Shellshock is that, we've got Peter.
Oh, well, you can double tap
that. Can we go in there? Can we double tap?
Yeah.
Two to the chest.
All right. Got Peter Hughes on the phone, landlining.
Yep. Right when Groovehouse answered, fortunately we didn't hang up, a Skype call came through, but it just dropped immediately.
Yeah, it's not. We can't count on the internet here tonight, apparently. So, there goes something.
That was on your end. That was the Skype call failing.
All right. Well, we'll do it this way, I suppose. Okay, I've got my phone turned on, but I've only got about 30% battery. If I can get my cable out of the car in a little bit, maybe I will be able to provide a hotspot for us.
Share some bandwidth.
Yeah, I've only got 60% on my Mac Air, but
I've got it working again.
You did.
Maybe we're back up.
Oh,
maybe we can go get shell-shocked. Yeah, so shell-shock, there's a bash shell that actually predates Linux, predates OS X, predates all this stuff. The vulnerability is in that. So the issue that we ran into is, you know, you can just swap out bash, which is a shell that's affected, for other shells, but
right.
The package manager, like the thing that lets you very easily swap out one shell for another, a dependency is bash. So it's like, you can't really, you know, it's just like, okay, we can remove that, but by the way, I'm also going to remove myself in the process and everything else you care about on your system. So we switched over to Z shell, but it was a lot of manual kind of stuff and going through, and everything that refers to bash for a backup script, so bash everything, we had to go in there and change. And then, of course, they come out with the patches, so.
Now it's working.
Yeah, it's working now. The thing is, if you're running OS X, and I think that's where the majority of our people are, if you're running Linux, chances are you know how to go and patch your system. If you're running OS X, the software update to patch your system actually isn't part of the software updates. You can't go, I don't believe, right now through the iTunes store. A little bit of feedback. What you need to do is you can actually search for shell shock patch OS X, and then Apple has a downloadable, I think it's just like a little iPack that you can, or DMG that you can expand and install, and it'll patch up your system.
So for the layman at home, this bash vulnerability, how is it going to affect the average computer user?
So it's the scary part is it's not so much the average computer user, it's that bash is in everything, not only, you know, servers and laptops and home workstations, it's in routers, it's in set-top boxes, it's in all of these devices, you know, all these, you hear Linux embedded systems, you know, like DDWRT, OpenWRT, you know, maybe even like some of the Kindle Fire devices probably have bash down in there. So it's not that, you know, it's not like you can really go and apply patches to those. Those could be out there for a while. So there could be a lot of exploits that come out and continue to trickle out over the next couple of years, next few years, that all have roots in this that we just can't fix quite yet. You know, like all those early TVs, a great example. We talk about, you know, Linux-based TVs that come out, and, you know, some of the early manufacturers might not support them like they should. This is going to be sitting out there forever, you know, an unpatched bash. No way to upgrade it.
All right. Wow, how encouraging.
This is not good news.
Well, that's I think that kind of thing's going to continue to haunt us.
Yeah, and the bad thing about this is that it's extremely, it's a huge problem. It's everywhere. Bash, like I said, goes back to like circa 1982, and that it's extremely easy to exploit too. Writing the exploit code is very easy, and it's not just a local. I think is that Pete bashing away. It's not just like a local exploit. It's that if, for instance, like if you've got a DHCP server, someone can actually pass, you know, a malformed packet, and it could, you could run code based on DHCP. Same thing with web servers. Pretty much anything that has bash as an underpinning, you could pass it a variable that could arbitrarily be executed. So it's pretty ugly. Hmm. I think Rapid7, the security firm, I think they're out of Austin. At least got an office in Austin. They gave it a 10, I believe, out of 10. And I don't think they gave Heartbleed, but maybe like a 6 or a 7.
All right, well, the phone number here is 7. Oh, wait. Actually, we have Pete. What am I thinking? No.
We got 2. And if the Skype craps out in the middle of it, I have the phone on mute so that I can just switch.
Awesome. Okay. Well, that means we're going to go to San Antonio via the Skype with the landline backup. To do the Technology Bytes Info Shot, take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
And the top story is the bash vulnerability, but oh, wait, I guess Barrett's talked a good bit about that, but, you know, I'll add a little bit to it. You know, basically, it's been a week since researchers discovered the vulnerability in the bash Unix shell, exposing millions of devices to remote code attacks by exploiting the same common chunk of code. By now, patches have been issued and most of the major systems have been secured. The bug even got its own Heartbleed-esque moniker. Shell shock is what people are calling it. But there's a lot that's not clear about it, and what went on in the brief window in which attackers could exploit the public vulnerability on unpatched systems on, you know, major places. So The Verge asked, how much damage did Shellshock do? The web optimization company Cloudflare has been tracking exploits closely, and as of last night, the company says it had blocked roughly 1.1 million Shellshock attacks. More than 80% of the attacks were reconnaissance attacks designed to compile a list of vulnerable machines Since servers using Cloudflare were protected, the chain stopped there, but it's reasonable to assume that unprotected networks were exposed to much more extensive attacks once they found once they built their list of who was vulnerable. Strangely, the vast majority of attacks came from French IP addresses, although it's difficult to say whether the attackers were actually located there or if they were just simply routing traffic through there. There's OS X, concern, as Barrett mentioned, since it uses the Bash shell. So far, those fears have not panned out. When Shellshock emerged, Apple said that the vast majority of OS X users are not at risk, because apparently you had to enable some higher-end functions that most people just use their Mac OS X setup as is. And so it's not exposed. The vulnerability is not available. Somebody may still discover a vulnerability that would provide an easy way in, but now it sounds like the patch is out for Mac OS X as well. In the wild, the vast majority of attacks have been against web-facing servers, which were vulnerable to easily executed HTTP-based attacks. And let's see, most of the damage came from unexpected lines of attack, like Barrett mentioned, attacking network-attached storage devices, which is, a NAS is essentially a large networked hard drive, and they used the NAS devices used Bash to communicate across the network. Attackers were able to access any data on the device, append their own SSH key to the authorized keys file. That means opening a back door for themselves that they could exploit later. It's an unexpected line of attack, but as networks become larger and more varied, growing to include more embedded devices, it's an attack many experts expect we'll see over and over again. The most alarming aspect is that for successful attacks, it's hard to say how far the damage reached. For every 10 reconnaissance attacks stopped by Cloudflare, there's at least one that got through, and researchers are still piecing out the net effect of all those harvested credentials and compromised systems. The majority of things of this vulnerability may have been dealt with within a week, but the damage is likely to play out for months or years to come, just in finding out what was done during this week, plus the things that Barrett mentioned about devices that are never going to be patched, that only when they're replaced or taken out of service will it change. In better news, Verizon, the deadline was coming where Verizon was going to start data throttling people who used the grandfathered unlimited data plan, the ones who stuck it out with that. But it's not going to happen. Verizon released a statement explaining its about face. They said that they take pride in the way they manage their network resources, but take seriously our responsibility to deliver exceptional mobile service to every customer. So they say they don't even say why they decided to do it. The plan was only ever going to impact 5% of Verizon's unlimited users, but it is a good sign that Verizon is listening to people. Plus, if you're using unlimited, that means you're among the bigger of the customers as far as a user goes for Verizon. So it kind of makes sense that they might figure out a way to handle that a little better. And now this is sort of the big thing and is sort of interesting. Windows, we were wrong because we said that they were going to announce some things about Windows 9, that was coming up, and apparently not, because Microsoft announced Windows 10. And when they did, there was one immediate glaring question. Why Windows 10? Maybe it was for the extra distance from 8. I guess 11, they're not going to go to 11 yet. A Redditor who claims to be a Microsoft dev has a better and funnier answer to that question. He claims that the name Windows 9 could break a whole bunch of lazy code. The issue is described like this. Let's see. If version starts with Windows 9, do something else, whatever, was the pragmatic, a lot of third-party products used that, saying, oh, if it starts with Windows 9, then that would mean it could know how to handle the case of Windows 95 and Windows 98. But what that would mean for lazy coders is that then software running on Windows 9 would also pass that test and would get handed the code that was intended for the much older operating systems, which would be problematic. So it's kind of a Y2K sort of problem. It's unsubstantiated, but we do know that they didn't have Windows 9. And they're going to Windows 10, so you can make your own decisions about why they did it. As far as features go, let's see here. Then my window closed on me. As far as features for Windows 10 that were announced, they gave a sneak peek. It's not a complete look at it. Obviously, they had a big an event though. They have no reason, you know, it said that this article says, you know, Windows next version is called Windows 10. Why? There's no apparent reason. The start menu is back, which is not a big, huge surprise. They previewed this all the way back in April, and it looks like we won't be seeing it on desktops until Windows 10. The new start menu will look familiar with some hints of Windows 8, including live tiles that you can resize and move around yourself. You can even resize the entire start menu to your liking. Microsoft says their goal there is personalization, so you can make the start menu work for you. It will also include universal search, just like the old start menu, but with the addition of web results. So wasn't that called Sherlock when Apple did it in 1990 what? Okay, I'm not going to snark on that. But everybody's got their things that they do different on different operating systems. Apple has their flaws too. Modern apps, you know, the ones with the modern interface, the tiled thing, will be on the desktop. Just like Modern Mix currently does on Windows 8, they'll be called Universal Apps and work pretty much like any other windowed app on the desktop. Again, this was one that they started showing in April. They're improving multitasking in multiple desktops. Microsoft's finally adding two very popular features to Windows, an expose-like multitasking feature called Task View, which is where you get the windows all shrink and it shows you kind of what each window – you can see enough of the window. It's smaller, but you can see enough of it to kind of figure out what's going on it and then, say, switch to a different application or whatever. It's known as Spaces on the Mac. And Arrow Snap is getting a little update, letting you snap up to four windows at once if you've used that before. It'll show window previews for other open windows and any empty spaces so you can easily drag them into view. They're updating the command prompt, so that's deep. They apparently updated it dramatically, but the only specific thing they previewed is that now you can actually paste a directory into the command prompt with Control V instead of having to right click, which is what you have to do currently. That may seem silly, but if you use command prompt a lot, you might have a different opinion about it if it's something that you use regularly. They also updated the touch interface, and they have a swipe gesture for task view, and the windows have enlarged buttons to make them easier to touch. They're trying to go for the touch friendly thing, which is, you know, they are in front on that as far as major operating systems. Apple's not done that except with iOS. And Microsoft made it very clear that Windows 10 is still in the very early stages. They'll be releasing a preview build tomorrow, but there are likely many new features to come and improvements to the interface beyond what they've shown today. The charms bar, for example, will change according to Microsoft. There'll be more info on on Windows 10 at the Build conference in April, and Windows 10 will launch in later 2015. So there's plenty of time for different features, etc. But, you know, and it'll be this is the quote new Microsoft. So it will be interesting to see if they make their deadline of 2015, you know, within of late 2015 or not, later 2015 or not, or if this is going to be another one of those that slips and slips and slips, like what was it? Longhorn was the code name. And so you need some cash you know, to pay for all those new devices to replace all the bash vulnerable NAS drives you've got and all that stuff. Google is increasing the rewards in its bug bounties program as it tries to make its software more secure. They're updating its reward pricing to range between $500 and $15,000 per bug, up from the previous maximum of $5,000 for a high-quality report, with an increased focus on discovering potential vulnerabilities within the Chrome browser. You better – if you want the $15,000 though, the Chrome reward support page says the applicant must demonstrate a, quote, sandbox escape with a reliable exploit that, quote, demonstrates that the bug reported can be easily, actively, and reliably used against our users. Unquote. Rewards on the higher end of the scale will be provided to researchers able to demonstrate a specific attack path, with Google adding the option for the vulnerability to be submitted first, followed by a working exploit later. A new Hall of Fame page has also been created, identifying and thanking the successful submitters. Though active from now on, Google is making an effort to appease already rewarded researchers. Valid submissions from July 1st this year will earn the creators a back payment at the increased reward levels. So cool on that. So if you're good at finding bugs, you can maybe turn that into some real cash in your spare time. We need to sell a video that promotes that. That seems like that there'd be an infomercial worthy deal. How to make lots of money finding bugs in Google products. I don't know that you'd do so great, but anyway. Now on to some new stuff. Just the final piece. A kind of cornucopia of different rumors. There's rumors that the next iPad, when it comes out, that gold iPads will be included. So that could be interesting. And supposedly also next month, not the iPads thing may be announced next month at the Apple piece. And another thing that may happen next month is Motorola may release their 6-inch Nexus 6. I'm waiting for the Nexus 15, which would be a 15-inch phone. So there's those are coming. And then I think I've talked about it on the info shot, and you may have, if you're into super high mileage cars, you may have heard of the Volkswagen XL1, which is the car that gets like 200 and something miles to the gallon. It's sort of extra geeky. But you know, the XL1 has a 47 horsepower diesel motor in it, like this little teeny motor in it. And so because Volkswagen, they're still car guys, even though they made this super high gas mileage car. So they took and swapped out the motor. Like a good car geek might, they swapped out the 47 horsepower diesel engine for a 1200 cc V twin motor out of a Ducati. The reason why Ducati? Well, Volkswagen's group's Audi acquired Ducati a couple of years ago, so it's corporate synergy. So this car weighs under 2,000 pounds. And now has 197 horsepower in it. And it's called the XL Sport. It will go 0 to 60 in about 5.7 seconds. That's not supercar numbers. But when you consider that the XL Sport is doing it with an engine that, relatively speaking, is pretty small, it's fairly impressive. And it keeps the futuristic looks of the XL1. Of course, they have not mentioned a few things like what's the gas mileage, and they're not sure if VW is going to offer the XL Sport for sale. Rather, it's an add on wheels for the limited edition XL1, and also a kind of an ad for the Ducati motor. You know, because and now I'm blanking on it. There's a motorcycle motor that tends to get used a lot more, from Japan, that gets used a lot, that's sort of the normal one of if you're going to cram this thing into something that that you want to make it hideously overpowered and you're not putting in like a big V8, that this is the motor. And now Ducati has its competitor in that front. And I'm Peter Hughes, and that's the InfoShot Technology Bytes news.
All right. Well.
And we made it all the way through without Skype hiccuping, as far as I could tell.
For whatever reason, the internet came back to life and decided to work. It just needed to be down long enough to humiliate us. And then it came back online. It's kind of what we expect around here at the Mighty 90.
It's just enough to make us sweat.
You can count on certain things that you don't really want to count on. Like technology problems.
Squeaky chairs.
Squeaky chairs.
Rickety chairs.
Did you just say rickety chairs?
Rickety, yeah.
Rickety chairs.
You sit in the rickety chair.
I think Groovehouse might have caught something. He might have the Ebola.
Mm-mm. He has chairbola.
Chairbola.
I got chairbola.
He's got sit something or another. Sitfulness. He is wearing clothes, though, ladies and gentlemen. All right, well, we have a call in the queue. We have plenty of open lines if you'd like to be on the air with us tonight. 713-526-5738 is the number to call, 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up?
Up first on the show, we're going to talk with Bob.
Bob, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Yes, this is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
I'm running a XP system on my computers, on two of them. Ran into a very strange effect on the Firefox browser. I was on the TV guide channel, and I either bumped some key the wrong way or something. The screen page stayed the same size as my monitor, but it miniaturized the TV guide listings to about 4 inches wide, where I can't even read them with a magnifier held up against it. Everything else on my other websites, and when I check new websites, my regular applications, all the pages are normal, but except for this TV guide listing.
All right, is this a laptop or a desktop?
It's on a laptop. No, it's on my desktop.
Okay, so on
my laptop works fine, meaning I get the full screen on the laptop.
All right, Bob, give me a second here. Give me a chance. Reason I wanted to know if it was on a desktop or a laptop is because if it's on a desktop, then I'm assuming you have a mouse connected to it. Does your mouse have a scroll wheel?
Yes, I have a trackball.
Okay, a trackball, or you're using a trackball or a mouse with a scroll?
Trackball.
Okay, on a trackball, I guess what you can do, you have to hold the control key down on your keyboard?
No.
No, I'm telling you, you have to hold the control key down on your keyboard and then roll the ball up or down.
There's going to be a scroll wheel on the trackball,
too.
Is
there?
Yeah, there is. Most of them.
Do you have a scroll wheel on your trackball?
Yes.
Okay, hold the control key down while you're on that web page. And move the scroll wheel back and forth, and you'll watch the web page get bigger and smaller.
Ah. All right. I just started up my...
I'm not going to wait for you to do this if your computer's not running, but there's a way to... you could do different websites. I could go to some websites as I get older, and the text is a little too hard to read, and you could actually tell your web browser to increase or decrease the size of the web page to make it easier to read. And you do the easiest way I found to do that is to use the control key and the scroll wheel. The other thing you could do is you can click on the view menu in your web browser, and it usually has a zoom in and a zoom out option.
Okay, say that again.
What browser are you using?
Firefox.
Firefox, okay. I believe if you just click on the view menu in Firefox... There's the menu choices across the top of the web browser, file, edit, view, and all that?
Yes.
Click on view.
I got it.
And then there should be an option to zoom in or zoom out. Yeah, if you click on view, zoom, and you can zoom in and you can zoom out.
I've been running these things for a long time, but I haven't
Never bothered to learn how to use it. Just
I'm not very knowledgeable.
That's all right. That's what we're here for. That's why we get paid the big bucks and you get the call in. And by big bucks, I mean nothing. All right. Did you get it sorted out?
Okay. I am. Well, I got it increased.
You could keep
doing it.
There
we go. There we go. I got it back to full screen.
Hey.
All right.
Success.
Yes. You're one for one. And I can't figure out how that happened. And it's been driving me crazy. And I've used my regular desktop. And except for TV Guide, I'd have to go to the laptop to use my TV Guide.
And now you can know when your stories are coming on.
It wasn't making sense. Say that again, I'm sorry.
I said, now you'll know when your stories are coming on.
I did not know about that Zoom feature on the.
Now you can make it bigger than normal. You can go even.
I filled the screen.
Yeah. You can make Matlock the biggest thing on your screen.
It did. I don't know how. I must have bumped the control button at the same time I was doing something else.
It's possible you did that. Also, there's a key combination that will do it, too.
Control plus and minus.
Control plus and minus. If you accidentally hit the control key and the minus key enough times, it'll shrink it down. Control and plus will make it go bigger.
That must have been, because I normally wouldn't use the control key, but I do use the arrow buttons a lot. So.
Well, now you can get yourself out of that jam should you find yourself in it again.
Oh, well, that was so simple, but I couldn't find it, and I've talked to three or four friends, and they said, look, why don't you call Wednesday night to 90.1? And see if they can help you.
Well, tell him thank you, and you owe him a beer.
You have done, at least, you have done me a great favor.
Well, we're
thank
glad
you.
To help.
I can get rid of that frustration.
All right, well, good luck, and have a great evening.
Nice job. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. All right. See, there you go.
Perfect show.
That's how it's done.
And now he can go and play pranks on his friends when he's at their house.
I thought for a minute there he was going to be where his screen had gone sideways.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Because if you hit a certain key combination, you can flip your screen around on some computers. And that's actually I wrote a helpline article that was that question and how to fix it. Because somebody's cat got on their keyboard or something and flipped their screen sideways. And that's apparently a very common problem out there in the internets, because it got up to around 700, 800 comments back, you know, before they shut off comments on the blog on that particular article. They shut down after a period of time. And it's still the number one or number two searched item that comes up in my helpline blog.
Cats on the internet are a problem.
Cats on the internet, cats on computers
Dwight
are a problem.
May not agree, but
cats on the internet don't seem to be a problem. They seem to be that, you know, cats using the internet or using your computer, that's the problem. All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. If you want to throw us another softball, we'd be happy to knock it out of the park. We've got about 20 minutes left before we have to take a short break and take care of station business. But until then, we can help you out. 713-526-KPFT. Let me see if I can find the... Groovehouse is bringing me something. Cats on a bunk bed. Is that Dwight?
No, but
they're cats on a bunk bed.
Yeah, their bunk bed.
They have their own bunk
yes.
bed. What? Groovehouse saw cats on the internet. Not just any cats on the internet, but cats that required him to leave the control booth and come into the broadcast booth and show that.
Since we were speaking of cats.
I know. But
because
like,
evidently somebody's dad actually built bunk beds for the cats. But the cats actually use them. Like they both actually sleep on the bunk
Groovehouse just did that thing. Like, have you seen it? I don't forget what the product is, but there's this commercial floating around with where the woman, the old lady, has a wall on her house, and she's got she posts her vacation pictures to the wall. I unfriend you. That's not how that works. So Groovehouse found a thing on the internet. Rather than send it to me in email or tag me on
Facebook.
We
just mentioned cats. We were just talking about cats. I know. I was like, well, here's this.
Imagine that. You found some. We're driving through town.
Did you see, it was kind of funny. Did you see the recent one where commercial where the woman like has the candy on the
She's playing Candy Crush with a hammer.
And she's like, I'm so glad you told me about this Candy Crush. And it's like a younger boy. He's like, that's not really how it works. She's like, and then she's like, I also, whatever, it's an insurance commercial, but
yeah.
But she's crushing it. And she's like, three in a row. He's like, yeah, that's, I'm a level two now.
So I was looking at the stats the Helpline blog, and my screen, I've got hundreds and hundreds of Q&As posted to the Helpline blog, and the coming in at number two today was My Screen is Sideways, which is the with 112 views, right under 124 views on what is ytimg.com and why does it want to access my computer. But yesterday, My Screen is Sideways was in fourth place with at 100 views. So it could, and you can't comment on it. Comments just stopped. I would still be getting comments.
What was that other one? Whitey Image?
YT Image. Yeah, Whitey. Looking for images of Whitey. Let's see. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. 713-526. Hey, the number one search engine term for today on my blog is the cloud.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. Ooh, the number five is how do I get rid of Yahoo? All right, 713-526-5738. All the lines are open. And the number one for yesterday was the cloud. Number three was my screen is sideways. hilarity. All right, 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the Technology Bites call-in show tonight. We have all of our lines are open. I would like to remind you that the fundraiser is coming up the week of October 12th, I believe. So we will have one more non-fundraising episode before we go into fundraising mode.
Gonna miss that one.
Are you?
Yeah.
How convenient. Where are you gonna be?
Iceland.
Iceland. Everybody's going to Iceland.
I'll be out of state.
Where are you going? Colorado?
New Mexico.
New Mexico?
Yes.
So what do you got against regular Mexico?
I prefer the New Mexico.
Are you going there? Well, you're not going there for...
No, just a little getaway.
Little getaway? Gotta get away?
Gotta get away.
All right. Well, have fun there and doing that.
Oh, yeah.
We'll go ahead and give you an early warning that we won't be here the week of Christmas and the week of New Year's Eve. Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, we are scheduled to be on the air, but we won't be on the air those nights because we don't want to do it. And Ray Hill will be taking over doing some special programming. Ah, look, a phone call. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air. We'd love to hear from you. We have all of our lines, well, except for now, two are open and available to you if you would like to be on the air with us tonight. 713-526-KPFT. Whoa, wow. So the last 7 days, My Screen is Sideways has been fourth place, 640 views. Since I first published it, now let me give you an idea, but I published that article in 2005. So it's coming up on it's actually September of 2005, so September of next year it will be 10 years old, and it got up to 770 comments on it before it shut down comments. And so most people saying thank you, but other people saying thank you because this will gives me a way to torment my friend, spouse, mother, son, whatever.
If you ever republish it, you should republish it sideways. For those that come to your blog.
That would have actually been very clever. If you're reading this now.
So if you think about it, then you're the sideways screen guy. It's like Jimmy J.J. Walker's Dynamite.
Dynamite! My screen is sideways! 713-526-5738. Groove House.
Mm-hmm.
I see that Wow. The last 30 days, my screen is sideways, is third place with 2,999 views in the last month.
It's the new Jay Lee maneuver. It's first turn your screen sideways, then ask Jay Lee how to make it not
sideways. All right, so looking for the quarter here, and my screen is sideways, number three for the quarter at 9,795 views. we're going to look at the year here for the year, and I guess let's see if that means like just from the beginning of this year or for a year from now, or between now and a year ago. See what the stats are for that. 713-526-5738 while I wait for that to churn. My screen is sideways for the year, the number two visited post in my helpline blog over the last year, 44,199 views of my screen is sideways with YTIMG coming in at number one with 53,981 views. Now we're going to go for the all-time. Let's see, since they started tracking, I guess, the all-time record, we'll see who's the number one. And then we'll go to the phone, 713-526-573. Okay, oh, and the number one all-time viewed post is My Screen is Sideways, since we started tracking on the Helpline blog at 80,599 views.
I need to delete your blog post and start making sideways monitor stands. there's a market out there.
Apparently there's a market out there. So, 713-526-5738, Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Joseph.
Joseph, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
Good.
All right, I guess it would be funny if you can turn the 60-inch LED TV sideways instead of the laptop, but that's a different question. Okay. The problem that I have is on my laptop, I have a lot of programs that are unwanted that I cannot delete. In the past, I used the Revo uninstaller, but the trial period kind of ran out on it. Are there any free programs that I could use, especially the Weather Channel? And there's, the program for Weather Channel I can't delete. And another one is the antivirus.
When you say you can't delete, how are you trying to remove it?
Well, I just went to Control Panel, try to do that, you know, remove program.
Uh-huh.
But it just won't.
Well, if you've got a program that's running in the background, it's hard to uninstall it until you actually exit the program. You don't need a separate uninstaller to remove it.
Yeah, I did. Well, I restarted my computer and everything, and I tried to uninstall it, but still wouldn't do it.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is finding the application itself and turning it off.
Oh, okay. How do I do that?
Well, for example, if you find your antivirus should have a little icon down by the clock.
Uh-huh.
In the little list of icons, one of those will be your antivirus program. You right-click it, and you can probably select exit or disable.
Okay.
And then once you turn it off, then you can go to Control Panel and uninstall it. You could also try uninstalling any of these after you boot the computer in safe mode. But I never use a third-party uninstaller. I don't see any need for that.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I can just right-click close to the right bottom corner?
Yeah, find the program itself and get it shut off. Because it's running, that's why you can't uninstall it. It won't let you uninstall it while it's running, so you have to actually turn it off.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay, cool. The second question that I have is I have an iPad
that's
freezing, and I'm trying to reboot the whole thing. So what are the procedures to do that?
What do you mean reboot the whole thing?
Call my laptop has that one key, it's a Lenovo. It's got one key reinstall, I guess.
Oh, okay. Have you ever backed your iPad up to iTunes?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, there's an option to reset the iPad completely.
Okay.
Do you have a computer that's connected to the internet?
Yes, I do.
All right. So Google search something like reset iPad.
Okay.
And there's a like reset iPad to factory defaults. There's an option if you go into settings and then general.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an option to reset. And basically the reset will take you through the process of just completely restoring the iPad back to the way it was when you bought it.
Okay. So do I need to connect it to the laptop or?
No, no.
Do I need to be online to do that?
Nope, not at all.
Okay.
But you'll need to connect it. You'll probably want to connect it to a laptop or to a desktop connected to iTunes when you start it back up so that you can get it set up again.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that would be the second step.
Yeah, but if you just want to reset it, just go into General, go to Settings and then General and select Reset. It's down at the bottom of that list of things. You can reset the iPad back and then just follow the prompts when it comes back up, and it'll tell you what to do, just like when you bought it.
Okay, cool. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it, man.
All right, thank you for your call.
You guys are fun to listen to, man. I always listen to you when I get off work on Wednesday. So.
Well, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for calling in.
All right, keep up the good work.
All right, thank you. Bye.
All right, bye.
All right, we got one more call in the queue, and we're getting up towards the top of the hour, so we're going to take this call and see how that goes. But if you want to be on the air with us, if we don't get you on in the first hour, we'll get you on in the second hour. Do we have a Barrett time tonight?
A short one.
A short one. All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. 713-526-KPFT. Groove House?
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, it's Matthew.
Matthew, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, I've got Windows 7 that it won't boot up. I mean, intermittently, I turn it on, and it'll say Windows is starting, but it doesn't start. So I turn it off and start it up again, and I get this screen says start Windows normally or run the boot up something. Anyway, I ran that startup program a couple of times, and it started up, but it still does the same thing. So I found that if I just choose run Windows normally and hit enter, it starts up. And it doesn't do it all the time, but all I need to do is after I boot it up the second time is choose start Windows normally and it starts right up.
All right. Well, you know, if your computer is not starting normally when you first turn it on,
mm-hmm.
it could be so many different things. It's kind of mind boggling.
Oh my God.
So how old is the computer?
Did you buy the
computer new or
I don't buy computers. I build my own.
So you you installed Windows 7.
Yes.
After building this computer.
Yes.
All right. How long ago did you first install Windows 7?
About 3 years.
3 years. Okay. Well, you know, something is probably, there's one of two things that are the most likely candidate for causing you the problem. One is something's trying to load up in Windows that's causing the system to hang up. So, you know, I don't know what all you have installed on the computer, but it could be the antivirus. It could be any number of programs that are trying to start up when you load the computer that are causing the problem.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, you know, let me tell you about this. I don't have this system online. I use it especially for nothing except editing pictures.
Okay, well, it doesn't matter whether it's been online or not, because I'm not suspecting at this point that it's necessarily a virus or anything. But
okay.
You've got something loading up that's causing. If it's not that, then you might have some kind of hardware issue, like a failing hard drive or bad memory or something that's kind of just giving it a hiccup when you first start it, you restart it, and it wants to come up. Okay, it's really hard to say. But if you tell me that you're only using this to edit pictures,
yes.
then what I would consider doing to troubleshoot this is, you know, since you built it in the first place,
mm-hmm.
consider backing up any data that you have stored on there, like image files or anything, put them on a hard drive, and consider reloading the operating system. Just get your Windows 7 disk, wipe the system out, reinstall Windows 7 from scratch, get all your drivers installed, and then reinstall your photo editing software and see if the system, you know, it's good to do a reload every few years anyway.
Yeah.
Because the operating system can deteriorate. But this will give you a nice, clean system to work on. And also, if it still has problems after you do that, then you know you've got a hardware issue.
Yeah.
And then you have to, that's a whole nother batch of troubleshooting.
But, right. Yeah.
But
I've got 1 terabyte, and I've got the 500 gigabytes just for the operating system and the programs.
Okay.
You could also try booting off a live CD just to see. It won't tell you if the hard drive's messed up, but it'll tell you if the processor or the memory or something like that is messed up.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck. Thanks for your call. Yeah, unfortunately, I think, you know, it might tell you if it's a hardware issue, but a live CD boots so lean that it may not hit any of the problem areas, like if there's bad memory, like a Windows.
It depends, yeah. You could also,
a
like,
lot of them
load
have memory
stuff.
Tests, yeah, when you boot up. Like, I know the two or three of them, you can actually
have
go
memory
in. And you
testers.
Can, yeah, you can boot up or you can say memory tests. It might take 30 minutes, but it'll run through everything.
Have you ever used a memory tester and had it actually tell you you've got bad memory?
I forget.
I don't remember.
In my experience with memory problems, memory tends to be one of the hardest things to diagnose a problem with. The way that I determine if it's a memory issue or not successfully is replace
the memory. You swap
memory. Yeah. And then if it starts working normally, then I go, yeah, it was the memory. Turns out it was the memory.
He, you know, he could also pay to upgrade to Windows 8 because Microsoft would probably appreciate that. Right. I don't know how that would help him, but...
Well, I just think now that we have two operating systems at version 10, the race is on for 11. Who's going to come out with their version 11?
I'll say Apple's been on 10 for a long time.
They'll probably get there first. Although Windows did skip an entire version. So, like, Windows OS X 11 could come out, and then Windows 19 will be released. Just, we skipped 18 versions. All right. Well, we are going to... have to take a short break here, but we will have a whole other hour of Technology Bites coming up after the break. So if you want to call in now and get in the queue to be on the air during the second half of the show, you're welcome to do that at 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT. Having a good show. We've had some good calls tonight. We appreciate that. We always appreciate when people tune in. Technology Bites is here for you. It's the People's Radio.
Somebody must be running AIM because it sounded like when somebody the left, open. The door shut.
No, it was a literal door.
A literal door. You'd rather admit to having someone walk in the room than admit to having AOL Instant Messenger installed. Yeah. I was going to say something clever, but then I forgot. Okay. No, actually, it was actually a question. Like, I had somebody email me in my role as a helpline columnist and said, you know, every once in a while, my computer makes it sound like a door opening and closing. I haven't been able to figure out what that is. I like the softballs. I do. So I don't have a problem with that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Roofhouse.
We'll be right back after taking a short break to bring you these messages.
Thursday, October 2nd. From 5 p.m. to midnight, enjoy free live music, art shows, drinks, bar bites, and more. Mid-Main Houston is composed of local businesses in the 3,500 to 3,700 blocks of Main Street and will donate a portion of the proceeds to KPFT. Come enjoy a brisk fall evening and help out KPFT when you visit a local establishment. That's Thursday, October 2nd, part of Mid-Main's Houston First Thursday series. Join us 5 p.m. to midnight. See you there. This is 90.1. Visit us at KPFT on Twitter and on Facebook at KPFT Houston.
Do you or someone you know own a local dining establishment? KPFT has a pledge drive coming up, and each drive, restaurants in the area feed our phone volunteers who give of their time to help KPFT reach its goals. Donations of food by these establishments are tax deductible and help community radio in the process. We also thank your establishment on air. Call 713-526-4000 for more information on how Houston eateries can lend a helping hand to KPFT. Ideal locations will be close to downtown Houston and be able to provide meals for 12 hungry volunteers. Again, that's 713-526-4000 for more information. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpft Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. Got a geek gathering this Friday night, and we're going to continue on last month's theme with even more wireless and radio gear. Now, while I have assembled all the missing connectors from last month's spotty software-defined radio demo, ruling out the possibility that we won't be able to tune local signals this time, I have taken special precautions to ensure that we will once again be waiting for a last-minute antenna delivery, this time in the form of a 10-meter dipole antenna that I'm going to attempt to string up atop Cone's parking garage. That will be fed by a dedicated ham software-defined radio, the Flex 1500.
Ham.
Yeah, I'm on. So we've got the new technologies, or rather, we've got new technology, last-minute deliveries, heights, and the risk of electrical shock. It should be a pretty good show. Regardless of how that turns out, I will have an instance of SDR Sharp running on a large flat screen for people to play with. And since it's the Halloween edition of the Geek Gathering, we'll be sure to show you what your wireless devices are doing behind your back by using a BeagleBone Black connected to a barely backpackable omnidirectional high-gain Wi-Fi antenna. SDR Sharp allows you to view radio waves captured by a software-defined radio. We'll be using a cheap SDR stick from China that, even after postage, won't set you back more than a single digit worth of dollars. The dongle in question was originally designed for satellite TV-based broadcast in the Asian market. The designers chose to cheap out on the hardware tuner and instead leave it up to the software engineers to get what they needed out of the wide swath of RF bandwidth the device was able to receive. Well, some hardware hackers with an eye on SDR soon discovered the shortcuts, and within a short amount of time had written the necessary software to bend the device to our will. And while we don't have any geosynchronous satellites showering us with PRC programming, we can tune into anything from around 30 hertz all the way up to 1.7 gigahertz. This puts AM and FM radio broadcasts within our reach, as well as any radio device operating between those frequencies, like the radio beacons on aircraft, the signals put out by garage door remotes, and baby monitors. Many signals can be easily converted to audio, and other signals, such as ACARs, can be decoded and then sent to other applications for display. So in the case of ACARs, we can take the decoded flight telemetry and use it to plot airplanes and their paths onto Google Maps. We can also decode radio teletype, APRS, and other digital radio modes that amateur radio operators may be using around the Houston area. And around things out, we'll have a number of handheld ham radios on hand for people who prefer buttons and knobs. These are shorter wavelength radios with a very long reach, thanks to a series of repeaters, many of which are linked via the internet. So, of course, it's completely legal to listen to most unencrypted conversations taking place in the Houston airwaves. You just can't transmit your own signal without a license from the FCC. And we'll have a number of licensed hams on hand that can give you some insight into getting on air, as well as the usual array of geeky banter, beer, wine, art, white, and darts. All this goes down this Friday at Cone's, located on the Montrose side of Midtown at 2808 Mile Limit Drew. Parking is ample, and there's food within walking distance. The most things within sight close at 8. It shouldn't be an issue as things get started a little after 7. So that's it for your Friday Night Fright, and that's that for Barrett time.
All right. Welcome back to the show, the post-Barrett time edition of our show. So you've got hardware that may or may not arrive in time for the Geek
We guys. Definitely have hardware that we're going to bring out that is working, but just to up the ante, because it looked like, okay, everything's going to work this time. There's nothing to leave to chance. We said, ha ha ha, no. Let's order some stuff that we need multiple pieces, and they're all coming from different parts of the country, and they're all scheduled to show up Friday. So we'll see. We'll see how the logistics work out on this one.
Well, I will have my iPad, my iPhone 6 Plus, my mini.
New
iPad,
hotness.
My iPad mini.
Your bent one?
I don't think it's going to bend.
Can you bend it with your mind?
Like, do you want people to try at the geek gatherings?
No. I will say this about being kind of behind the curve on new technology adoption. That's the word.
And also on word adoption. Yeah, being behind the curve.
On English language first, second.
English? Your English very good.
Yeah, well, watch that.
Ah.
That's not nice. All right, so, yeah, so anyway, so basically, the difference between waking up at midnight and ordering my phone from Apple and waking up at 6 a.m. and ordering my phone from Apple was the difference between having my new device in a week or a month. So I've had a lot of time waiting on my device to be delivered, which is actually coming a little bit sooner than I thought it would. It's actually going to be like a month and a half, but it's going to be here tomorrow. But because I've been waiting on it and I committed to this purchase, I've been getting to read all the reviews. Because normally, you know, you want to buy new technology without much research. You know,
hop in head first.
Just dive in. Later. Early adoption, and just get in there and buy it without really realizing, and then be the person who discovers whether it's perfect or flawed.
So in this one, you got to be the early adopter. But without actually having
financially
having it,
without any of the benefits, right? So I've been reading all the, you know, will it bend? It bends, you know. Is it usable with one hand? Is it, you know, I love it, but I hate it. It's the first iPhone that I was torn on whether I liked it or not. All the articles that have come out, but the one finally I got some validation. Bob Levitis, Dr. Mac, actually said that after working with both phones, he's picked the 6 Plus. So, you know, Dr. Mac says it's okay. So I don't know. I will see. I'll be curious to see how this goes.
Yeah, I wonder if this one, will you be able to fly with it?
Ha ha.
All the anticipation. Nobody said anything. I've looked at the reviews, and nobody has said whether or not you can fly with your iPhone 6 Plus.
Well, I don't think it.
Put it on your head and give it a spin and take off.
Laugh it up, Fuzzball.
Trying to hit the trifecta on the Quisp episodes.
The iPhone Quisp Plus. Yay. 713-526-5738. Save me from my hateful and abusive co-host.
If you put enough of a charge on it in the microwave, you should be able to get enough juice to fly.
You have to back rev it to iOS 7 so it's
it
waterproof.
Becomes waterproof.
And then you put it in a bowl of water.
Well, only if you're going to fly over water. Which
no,
might be the safe way
it
to
only
go.
Charges if it's in water in a microwave. That's my understanding. All these people are doing it wrong, obviously.
You heard it from Jay Lee.
Technology Bytes does not actually suggest that you charge your phone in a microwave or immerse it in water.
At the same time.
Or ever. I think we should have a new metric for portable devices, which is the Barrett metric.
Barrett factor.
The Barrett metrics.
The latest phone is holding up.
Barrett has got a new phone, a new-ish phone.
Uncased.
That no case.
Had it for at least 2 months,
and
if not three.
It is not cracked.
No.
It
inspection.
It is not.
Up for inspection, sir.
No case.
No blemishes.
No screen protection on it. The glass. Is this like some kind of very good glass?
Yeah, it's the Gorilla Glass 2, I think.
The weirdest part, though, is that there's still three keys on the virtual keyboard that are broken, and I can't figure out how he did it.
Oh, now he's going for the trifecta. I think he's going to go for the fourfecta.
Flip it around.
Like this?
Yep.
So this is the top?
That's the top.
Even though that looks like some kind of rudimentary home button, it's not.
It's a speaker.
It's a speaker.
Ooh, or it's a microphone.
It could be your next article, how to find the top of Barrett's phone.
Did you turn it on?
It's
I'm
sideways,
on it.
But
get
I
can't.
Side, right-hand side.
I got it.
Call us with your technology problems. As long as there's not a button on it, we're going to
take
care of it.
Was it completely shut down?
Yeah, it was shutting down.
I'm not sure about that iPhone 6 Plus for you.
Computer.
I was just going to say, phone turn on. Okay, Google.
Cortana.
So this is, how big is the display?
This is a little over 5 inches. I think it's around
Nexus,
5.
This is a Nexus.
That's a Nexus 5.
Nexus 5. It's a little over 5?
A little over 5, right around 5. I think maybe 5.1.
This is the size of the iPhone 6. So iPhone 6 is 4.7, right? 4.7 inches?
Just plain iPhone 6, yeah.
So mine will be like...
That is 5.427 inches high and 2.72 wide. So a little over 5. Pushing 5.5.
I'm going to be curious to see that comparison to the iPhone 6. The iPhone 6 Plus is... Let's see what the dimensions are exactly on that. It is... Oh, great. Millimeters. Go away.
I've got millimeters. How many millimeters is it?
Oh, well, let's see.
This is 138 by 70.
158 by 77.
Whoa, that's size. That's going to be quite a bit bigger than this.
Yes.
So just ever so slightly wide around the center. Another
5.44 inches wide. By...
No, 5.44 inches wide?
No, 5.44 inches tall.
Okay, like so that's...
Sorry. No. That's if you hold it sideways.
Roll it sideways.
It's almost like Dwight's here again. That's a big phone.
But it's also true HD on the display, so that'll
so
be
So come
nice.
To the Geek Gathering and watch Jay's phone bully Barrett's phone.
I'm going to try really hard not to break mine in the next 2 days after talking it up so much.
Right now he's rubbing it on himself.
Cleaning the screen.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. Groovehouse.
Yes.
I see that we have a call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
713-526-KPFT. All the other lines are open. Let's go to the phones. Groovehouse, who do we have?
Up next, it's Rand.
Rand, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, you know, my wife has an iPhone 5S, and she broke the screen on it pretty bad. Just the front screen, like everything else is fine. But we're looking for a place to go and try and get it fixed. I have a small crack. I have an S4, a Galaxy S4, and I have a small crack on my screen. So we're wondering if maybe you guys knew of a place in Houston to go and get... you know, get it repaired at a reasonable price. We've seen some stuff on Groupon and stuff like that, but
I don't know how much they charge for a screen replacement, but there is a place that I found to have when my iPhone was not working outside of warranty, called iPhone Repair Houston or Houston iPhone Repair.
Uh-huh.
And they are at I-10 and around Willcrest.
Okay.
Or Kirkwood down there in that area. If you Google iPhone Repair Houston, you'll find them. Let me see if I can actually do that.
There's lots of little places like that.
Also, if you're around Harwin or if you're familiar with the Harwin area, there are a number of New York-looking kind of bodega shops where you can go in and they will do all kinds of stuff.
Now, I have no reason other than my own experience with this company to recommend them, but I did my research when I needed to go find one of these places because like the other guys mentioned, there's a ton of places that do this kind of
thing. Yeah, I mean, I've seen a ton of places. It's just
What I liked about this place is that the Yelp and other reviews about this place said that they were good and they would do it while you waited. And sure enough, I called them and I went over there and I took my phone in. And there was nobody else in the store, and the guy behind the counter took the phone, took it back to his workbench. It took about 45 minutes. He took it apart, fixed my problem, gave it back to me for what I think was a reasonable price.
Awesome. Okay.
So,
what was the name of the place again?
It's called Houston iPhone Repair.
iPhone Repair. Okay.
And it's HoustoniPhoneRepair.com.
Okay, cool.
They fix cracked screens. They're out at 11329 Katy Freeway.
Yeah.
They say let me see what they say. iPhone.
They publish their prices. They kind of know what you're getting into, it looks like.
They do publish their prices. It's not cheap to get an iPhone 5 screen repaired, but it's cheaper than a new phone.
Now here's the thing about Samsung, because Samsung sells their stuff aftermarket, so you can get OEM screens from Samsung. The problem with Apple is that they do not sell anything aftermarket. You cannot get an OEM Apple screen. You can't get it. It's all the glass and the digitizer and the screen are all glued together straight from the factory, and only Apple has them. So anytime you go to get a screen repair, if you go to Apple, it's going to cost more, but you're going to get a real Apple screen that was made for Apple with Corning Gorilla Glass or whatever it is they use now, stuck together by Apple for Apple. Anywhere else you go, either you're going to get an aftermarket screen that was made by somebody else that isn't as high quality, like it'll be TFT display instead of IPS or whatever.
Right.
Or the other stuff is in the aftermarket area. What they do is they'll take screens that were on phones that died or got the glass cracked, and people have these expensive machines that can take the glass off and then take all the glue off, and they'll put a new piece of glass on it. But the thing is, so you might be able to get an OEM screen as far as like the actual screen, but nobody really has the screen and the glass. So even if you can get a real Apple screen in the aftermarket, what you'll get is you'll get a cheaper regular piece of type of glass. And so it won't have like the oleophobic stuff that's on them and everything. So a lot of times what they'll do is they'll go ahead and put a screen protector on there for you because it provides a little more protection on the glass, and it also gives you makes it easier to wipe clean the oleophobic properties and stuff. So anyway, I'm just pointing that out because the screen is more likely to be able to crack in the future because the glass is actually not as
good as it was,
strong as it was on the original OEM screen. You've already
demonstrated yourself as a threat to screens.
Yeah, well, we're both looking to like sell our phones and then upgrade. So, you know, we're going to fix the cracks in the glass and then sell them and then, you know, upgrade. So, you know, if it...
Yeah.
It only has to last long enough to sell it.
If it cracks down the road, then, you know, I'm sorry for the next person, but...
Well, it's a... You know, like I said, this place I've had some experience with. I think for what it would cost you to do it through Apple, you may lose any profit in your resale.
Yeah. So HoustoniPhoneRepair.com.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've done business with them once. I was pleased with the service that they rendered, and it was painless. I just drove out there, waited, got my phone back, and it works.
Awesome. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. I'll check it out.
All right. Thanks for your call. Good luck.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
You too.
You have somebody who went through, I don't know who they went through. They replaced the screen on an iPhone 4 and that had been cracked. And within a couple of weeks, the person cracked it again. So then I actually went on, I think on Amazon, and bought an aftermarket screen and replaced it myself, which was somewhat harrowing because on the 4 and the 4S, to replace the screen, you have to go in through the back of the phone, remove the battery, remove the motherboard, remove everything to pull the screen out, and then put this new screen in and then rebuild it all back through the back. Fortunately, with the 5 and the 5S, it's a lot easier to repair because you actually start with the front on the screen. So you take off the two screws at the bottom, you pull it apart, and there's basically a plate with three screws. Disconnect those. It's got three connectors. Those pull apart. Put the new screen on. It's a lot. It's much easier than the Form 4S.
All right, 713-526-5738. Sound like somebody hung up. All right, 713-526-KPFT. If you'd like to be on the air with us tonight, all of our lines are open. 713-526-KPFT. Oh.
Did you mention the Eric Holder stuff, Pete, on the news?
No.
Yeah, I just saw this. So apparently he came out yesterday, for those that don't know. What is his position? Is he
He's the Attorney General.
Yeah, the Attorney General. He is chastising companies like, he didn't name them, but like Google and Apple and other technology companies for not leaving back doors in hardware and software because it may, I guess, hurt investigations that concern children, like kidnapping and maybe child abuse and maybe sexual predators. So think of the children, build in back doors.
He must have just recently watched War Games.
Wow. Yeah.
And he was like, no, I just watched this movie. And they said that all the developers always put a back door in because that way, if they want to get in after somebody else takes over the computer, then they have a way to get back into it, you know, like maybe their kid's name.
Or to play chess.
Yes. Would you like to play a game? Yeah. So apparently, he's just one of a few, but a lot of federal, a lot of state, and a lot of local law enforcement officials are complaining really loudly that companies are, quote unquote, undermining efforts to fight crime, including terrorism. by making devices, you know, more resilient to other people getting
hit. Did this have like an official seal of like
stupidity,
like the People's Republic of China?
No.
or did they did now? You got to make sure and watch where they cut after he says that, because it might undercut it if you see the whole tape when he says, you know, because it means law enforcement can't get into your phone if they're trying to do it, and then cut. And after the cut, it's like, I told them that we can't get into their phone.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, we hear a lot of different stories out there, you know. And then I know that a lot of the technology that the FBI has been licensing to police departments are doing so under, like, non-disclosure agreements with, you know, like license plate reading things and different kinds of electronic surveillance. So,
well, there was – Apple had a canary, which was a piece of legal jargon in some of their documents – that essentially said, you know, we've not received a request for, you know, data from the federal government, essentially. And the deal is they put that on there because then when it disappears, those in the know that that means they've gotten a request, that they've had to fulfill a request, because often the request comes with an order that they can't reveal it. But in legal documents, they have to put things that are true, so they remove the statement that's not correct, and that's why they call it a canary, because when it's gone, it means you know that they've received and fulfilled a request for government data.
Hmm. All right. Well, I see that Groove House is screening a call for us now, but we have all the other lines are open right now. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. A little over half an hour left in the program this evening, so... What'd you find?
Oh, nothing. Just the canary thing. Also, in China, I think a couple days ago, meanwhile, just everything's getting kind of silly at this point. The Chinese cavity searched 10,000 pigeons that were supposed to be used in some kind of National Day celebration to make sure that explosives weren't lodged in any of them, or they weren't carrying any kind of... This is true. I was like, okay, this is so onion. But no, it's true.
No bleep.
Security. Yeah. Security's getting silly these days.
All right. So it looks like Groove House just about has our call ready to go, but we do have open lines. If you want to be on the air with Technology Byte, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. 713-526-KPFT. Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, it's Robert.
Robert, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I have a colleague of mine who has Windows 8 on his laptop, or on his daughter's laptop, and she has lost the password. How do you reset it without having the any Windows 8 master disks?
Well, there's a couple of ways you can do it.
I tried the Hirons CD.
The what CD?
Hirons everything CD, 15.2. Okay.
There's another bootable CD or flash drive you can make called NT Password. It's NTPASSWD.
Okay.
And if you do a search on NTPASSWD, you'll find the site. It's it's the offline password and registry editor.
I've used that one before. I don't know if I've used it on Windows 8.
I haven't used it on Windows 8, but I've used it on 7.
I've used it in the past, and it works.
And it does work. And it basically makes a live CD that you boot the computer with, and it takes you through some menus, and you can you blank the administrator password, you can blank user passwords, or set them to whatever you like. I choose to blank them. It just makes it easier. And,
I've got a CD that does that, but this is actually a Samsung, and it's got the UFI drivers, you know, the boot thing. Which, of course, won't see anything. So turn that off and use the CSM. And the machine kind of boots into Linux to run the NT password program. But then it stops trying to access the hard drives.
Well, here's another option for you. If you are – I'm gathering that the reason you want to recover – or be able to log into the computer is because there's data on the hard drive you'd like to access?
Oh, yes. We don't want to lose the stuff. I mean, If I have to, I'll take the hard drive out and stick it in another computer and suck it off.
Exactly. That's what I was going to suggest.
It's a lot of aggravation.
But the NT, I'm looking at the NT password program right here, and it says it will work on Windows 8.1.
Okay. Plus I'll just download the native NT password program.
But if the Samsung has a protection against, like, in the BIOS?
Are you saying that the computer's got a BIOS password?
It's UEFI.
No, it doesn't have the BIOS. Fortunately, they didn't set the BIOS password, so
yeah.
I could turn the UEFI off.
There's no chance that they registered that machine with any kind of an email address when they first got it, is there?
Okay. No, we tried that. Okay. We put our email address in, and that didn't work. And she has the password hint from her previous password. which she didn't change so much, the new one. So,
well, I wonder if a repair install of Windows 8 would do it.
Probably, but we don't have a disk.
No, that's right. Well, I would try the offline, what they call the offline NT password and registry editor. I've used it since Windows XP. I've managed to get into many a computer without where I didn't have the password and I needed to get it. It works consistently for me.
It has
some additional software it will load for other like if you're using a RAID drive and so forth. What are you looking at, Barrett?
I was going to say, do you have a relatively fast internet connection?
Yeah.
Well, there's something that speaks to NT password. If that doesn't boot, there is a Linux distribution that has a lot of tools that will actually break and reset the Windows NT passwords all the way up to Windows 8. There's one, it's Kali, K-A-L-I, Linux. It's a bootable distro. I use it. It'll actually boot in and work with UEFI drives. It'll work with LVMs, with RAIDs, with a whole bunch of stuff. The downside is you probably want a DVD, and it's about a gig or a gig and a half download. I don't know if they make it very slim, but it has everything you could possibly want. So that should boot up. It should see the drives. If you're a little bit familiar with Linux, let it boot up. Do like a df-h. And you should see that drive. And if you do, then you can go ahead, go through the menus, find the password reset. I believe there's NT password. There's also chntpw, which is just change NT password. Even though it says NT, it's still Windows 8. It's all the same scheme. But K-A-L-I, Kali Linux.
K-A-L-I, Kali.
Yep.
Okay, I'll download it.
Cool, good luck.
And people have been asking me about backing stuff up. And I must admit, I've completely given up backing stuff up now.
Really?
Yeah, but any time I lose something, I need a picture or a file or anything, I just call the NSA.
Right. And then you go on the extra special list.
No, they'll help him because he's English.
If you actually put on your site the email address of NSA and their phone number, eventually they get so pissed off with people ringing them up, they'll give up.
One would hope, but we will see. I like the attitude.
All right, thanks for your call.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.
All right, 713-526-5738. We got about half an hour left in the show, so give us a call, 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse, who do we have up next?
Up next, we've got Kyle.
Kyle, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. I just have a quick question.
Okay.
I had a Windows computer, and it has gone on to computer heaven. And I'm very interested in buying a Mac Mini.
Okay.
To replace it. My only problem is where I work, it's all Windows-based, and I have the opportunity of working from home a couple of days a week. And so I have some compatibility concerns with using an Apple computer to log in to a Windows-based network.
If you're super concerned, you can get minis that have two hard drives in them instead of having an optical drive. Or even if it has one, you can use Bootcamp and basically install Windows, and it'll be a Windows machine for that purpose.
Okay, I'm not that big of a techie, so I wouldn't have the first clue knowing how to do that.
All right, what are the concerns? Like, what do you have to do for work?
VPN is going to be a big concern.
Do you know which VPN solution your company uses?
Windows Remote desktop?
No. That's,
remote desktop is just a means of controlling another one computer from another computer.
Once you're on the VPN.
Yes.
Kind of, maybe.
What size
company do you work for?
Very large company.
Okay. Do they support the bring your own device idea where if you bought a Mac, you can use it with corporate solutions?
All we have at my office is a local tech guys. I haven't heard of anything about, you know, bring your own device in.
So you're going to buy, you're going to go out and buy your own computer and try to use it at work or use it for work.
Correct.
Have you talked to your IT department about whether or not that's allowed or supported?
Oh, it's allowed because I can work. If my computer hadn't died now, I could do it.
Well, what I'm
it's a Windows-based machine. All I have is an icon that I emailed myself, and it launches via the website, via the internet, secured website, and I log in and I'm remote.
Okay, so
is it maybe Citrix?
Is it Citrix?
No.
Okay, but if it's a web client that allows you access to your corporate resources, then your Mac Mini will have a web browser.
Do you have to use Internet Explorer, or can you use like Firefox or Chrome for it?
Actually, Internet Explorer, or I don't actually have to open a browser window to do it.
Now, hold the phone. That's not what you just said. Yeah.
What you just said.
Well, I'm sorry. I may not know the right term.
Oh no.
All right, so a web, okay. I know
Internet Explorer, Google. I know you use those to surf the internet.
Right, and you also said that you had a web-based interface for getting to your company's resources.
Right.
There's only one way to access the web, and that's with a web browser. So you may have an icon.
But it could be GUI-based.
Yeah, can we ask him?
Actually web-based.
Can you walk us through? So let's say you wake up in the morning, you're going to work remotely, your computer's been shut off all night, you come up, you turn on your computer, what do you have to do to be able to work? What do you click on to get to the point where you can do your job from home?
I emailed myself a link. So what I do is I get up in the morning, turn it on, boots up, there's an icon on my desktop, double-click.
All right, what does that icon look like? What does that icon say?
Computer.
Huh?
It just looks like a little old PC.
It might be a remote desktop icon.
PPTP or maybe a remote desktop.
All right, so
it's remote desktop.
Okay, let me ask you this. You say you email yourself a link.
When I got the position that I could work from home, they set up my computer, they gave me the link, they said, email this to you.
Do you know what that link? Do you know what that link is? Do you still have that link?
I could tell you, but my computer won't even turn on
now. Here's the situation that we're in. You have been told a number of things that you can do to do your job from home, but you have not obviously been told exactly what it is that you're using to do this. So our ability to support you in doing your job using a Mac is extremely limited. And beyond that, you tell me that you work for a large company with a paid IT staff. So what I would like to see you do is I'd like to see you take this question and present it to your IT staff to say, this is what I'm trying to do. Can it be done? And what do I need to do it? Because they have people that know, not only do they know the technology that your company is using, but they get paid to teach and instruct their coworkers on how to use it.
Okay.
We're fumbling here because we don't know the exact tools that you're using, but you could conceivably.
It can be done.
Yes, you could conceivably do it. There's a possibility that you can do it with a Mac. There might be a comparable way to do it, either through a web browser or a VPN client. There's a remote desktop tool for the Mac. I have for example, I will tell you how I do it. My company, we have basically mostly Windows computers that we use. And every once in a while, I will connect to my computer at the office from home on my Mac, my Windows computer. I launch my VPN client so I get a secure connection between myself and the corporate network. And then I launch a remote desktop, which allows me to connect to my computer at the office. I have to know the name of that computer to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to have the VPN software and the remote desktop software installed. So you could totally do that from a Mac. But I can't tell you if you can do it from a Mac with your corporate environment because I don't know enough about your corporate environment or the tools that you're using.
Okay.
And since you're the one, so you have, and unfortunately, you know, the computer that you're doing this on, you can't even sit down in front of it and kind of just, you know, tell us more information about it.
Right. But
it sounds to me like you've got some kind of remote desktop that you're launching to connect to a computer at work or some kind of maybe a virtual machine or I don't know what.
VPN is going to be the tricky part. And you could not even, I mean,
that's
you could
not
be
even
going
that
to
tricky
a,
because Cisco has a great client if they use Cisco.
Yeah, if they use Cisco, but I mean, if they could have like a Netgear solution, they could have some weird third party stuff, that, you know, not knowing.
Yeah.
Everything else though, you can, you know, there with the exception of PowerPoint, Mac has a pretty good answer to everything Windows has. Networking is the same.
I just learned to, and Visio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no Visio. There's no publisher. There's
no project either.
Yeah, project is kind of... Mm. Yeah, there are some things that are missing, but you can, for instance, you can connect to file shares. You can get on the network. You can do pretty much anything you do on a Windows computer. Yeah. So the main thing is you just need to figure out from your company how to connect to your resources at work.
Okay.
So have fun with the new Mac Mini.
Okay.
Don't forget to get a monitor and a mouse and keyboard.
Well, I have all that computer I bought. Just as a little, was an Atom. It was just a little cheapy computer anyway.
The Coleco
so
Atom.
God, I wasn't all that. All
oh,
that
okay.
Hard. To complicate matters even more. And since you're not a techie, this might be a little bit beyond your ken. But as Pete mentioned, there is the you can load Windows on a Mac Mini. You can also run Windows virtually on a Mac Mini. So if you discover that you have anything that is completely Windows-centric, you could virtualize that and do it.
Okay.
All right.
All righty.
Good luck.
I'll go double-check what the actual connection is and then maybe call you back.
Talk to your IT staff because if it's a big company and they're paying people to do this kind of work, I like to see them earn their keep. You know, I don't want to provide too much free tech support for your company.
I understand.
You know, that's kind of where I draw the line. If they want to pay me, I'd be happy to do it. They could put a donation into the show. I'll help you as best I can, but you need to have more information for me to be able to do that quickly and where I don't feel like I'm, you know, supporting Brown and Root or whoever the heck it is that you work for.
Yeah, so, no.
Thanks for your call tonight. I appreciate it. All right, bye-bye.
I think he said he had a Coleco Atom.
You know, I've gotten...
He may have had one of those little boxes with an Atom processor because they tended to get known by
that.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking.
No, but the power supply is in the printer.
210.
Sorry, in a Coleco Atom.
In a Coleco Atom.
The power supply was in the printer. And you had to hook everything up, and the power supply for everything, the computer and everything, was in the printer, like the power converter. So if the printer went out, everything else was useless.
It was still
I've heard HP is considering that for their next generation of computers.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us, 713-526-KPFT. You know, I don't know how many corporate IT departments I've inadvertently helped, but or hurt, possibly hurt.
Great, well, I'll get on in. It'll work. It'll be fine.
Tomorrow morning he's going to walk in and they're going to go, did you listen to Technology Bites last night?
Sometimes when I get I'll get an email from somebody, it'll be from like, you know, Brown and Root or, you know, Halliburton or something. I was like, good God, why are you asking me? I mean, you've got an IT staff. If you don't have a good IT staff to support you with your work computer, then
hire Jay.
Hire
you're
going
to say, Brown and Root wrote you saying, please stop telling our employees to ask us stuff.
I can't believe
don't
that joke on Technology
boat.
Bites alerted our employees that we have an IT staff.
The oddest thing when I was working in big corporate America and carrying around a Mac is that often in traveling around and being – so I was on different – it wasn't just in my local, you know, home network in the part of the corporation where I worked, but like traveling even overseas, my Mac, I tended to be up and going and working on the network faster than the people who had like corporate issued laptops that were
faster than
to.
The people who didn't have their own weekly computer call-in show.
Well, no, some at that time, oh, at that part time of it was just the Mac. I mean, you plugged in the Ethernet cord and cable and the internet worked and everything just went.
There's a lot of MacBook Air in boardrooms and in the business world now. Not you don't see like the big, you know, thicker ones, but you know, there's a ton of executives that are carrying MacBook Airs now. Like just the last year or so.
Where I work in the last 3 to 5 years.
It's more Mac than Windows now.
Super Microsoft Windows, super, you know, like they didn't like Apple. And all of a sudden, like within like a year, all of them had MacBook Airs.
You make
all
a wide enough notebook and people will change operating systems, I think.
Build it and they will use it.
Yeah.
And then they were all raving about how, you know, elegant and sleek it is and how nice it is.
I'm very artistic now.
Well, you know, one of the things that we've done successfully at my company is that we have, you know, distanced ourselves so much from the support of Macs that when people really, really want them, they strive really, really hard not to tell us that they've got one because they will actually force themselves to learn how to use it so that they don't have to draw attention to themselves for using unsupported hardware.
That's ingenious on your part.
Yeah.
Actually.
And it's actually now gotten easier to where we, you know, I am happy. There are certain types of coworkers that I'm, when I hear they're getting a Mac, I'm happy because I know I'm not going to hear from them. You know, it's also helpful now that I know how to use a Mac and I can support them. So I've actually, you know, I'm enjoying seeing more of them come into the workplace.
Now, if you could just convince the Windows users to do the same thing, then you could have a lot more spare time to, I don't know,
update
write
Facebook.
More columns.
Yeah. All right. So 713-526-5738. You know, the whole thing of now is really just people bringing mobile devices.
Well, it was called, I guess, BYOD for bring your own device, but all the IT shops are calling it bring your own demise because that's really what's going on. I mean, you know, you don't so much protect the perimeters anymore. There's, you know, you still have to have firewalls. You still have to have all this stuff. But the big thing to beat up now is you go after the handsets, and that gets you into the corporate network in a lot of cases. So
that's been true with laptops too, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing. Yeah.
And any VPN connection.
Any device that a person may take home and then in evenings feel like, hey, I can go download some music on this, or I can watch a video on this, or I can play a game on this. Anytime you're sharing space with
child
or the child, it's bad. You don't want to have shared space between corporate environment and home environment.
Well, it used to be, but it's probably still is the case that, you know, corporate computers go home, laptops and so forth, and they get used by husbands, wives, and kids. And one of the big problems we had was they would just get infested with spyware and viruses and get connected to the VPN or be brought back into the office and just flood the network with that crud. And there was actually one time where I had to explain to this woman why the computer that she let her husband use was suddenly infected with tons of porn pop-ups.
Nice.
Back when you actually had to go to some, when you were getting that stuff really meant going to bad
sites.
So
you see.
You blamed it on her, right?
I should have. But. All right, Groovehouse, I see we got some calls in the queue. Who's next?
Up next, we're going to talk to Pete.
Pete, you're on the air with Pete in Technology Bites.
Yes, sir. How's it going, you guys?
Good, good. What can we do for you?
Thanks for taking my call. I had an Evo phone, and I took it into Sprint to get service. The guy ended up locking the phone up, and there was no way. And so my SIM card got locked, and I had just started getting contacts. I'm a small business. I just started getting contacts, and I have no way of getting them open. And they say they've searched the system, and
who's your
carrier? They don't have a way to get into it or anything. I'm just SOL at this point.
Who's your carrier?
Sprint was. Sprint. Actually, before that, it was when they had the walkie-talkies, the two-way, rather.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's how to do. Boost Mobile was a big Evo user, too. So when you set up this phone, the Evo is an Android device, right?
Well, it wasn't Android then. No.
No.
It wasn't Android then.
It was proprietary?
It was just,
Or it's just like a regular brick
phone
where you put your phone numbers on the SIM card and all that?
Well, what they did was whenever you pick in a number, you can either save it to the device itself or save it to the SIM card. And I put a lock on the phone to lock where just anyone couldn't go to the phone and just, you know, wrap it. So it had a lock on it. And so evidently the guy tried to do it 3 times. And cause it only gave you 3 chances to, and then it would lock. And when he gave it to me, he said, hey, the phone locked. I was like, well, you did it. Anyway, long story short, they ended up giving me another phone, which I have I have a new phone now. SIM card to give back to me,
they say there's nothing we can do about it. You just have to start over, or, you know, but there's no way to unlock that SIM card once it was locked.
Is this like an SD card or something?
Yeah, it's
Well, it's a little SIM. Yeah, I guess not. They don't go in Apple's, but yeah, it's the card that usually has like the caller specific information to the phone. You can store like X amount of contacts on it. Some of them have memory like anywhere
Sprint?
From 16K to 256.
On Sprint?
No, they're all phones. Most phones use them. Like some GSM phones don't. But yeah, like this has a micro.
Oh, yeah. Like all the Sprint phones have it. The
like
SIM card.
Card?
Some of those.
No, it's not an SD. It's a SIM card.
I think AT&T had the SIM card also.
Yeah, almost every carrier has a phone that has a SIM card. I'm not finding a lot of information on that. That's a security.
It's designed to
it's
keep
designed
people
to
out.
Do that. Usually most of the ones I've seen, they lock after 10 times, which is a little bit more forgiving. That 3-time lock is pretty ugly. I know in the future you can actually go in there. I think sometimes you can reconfigure that. But I'm not finding any information on how to lock a locked SIM card right now. Unlock a locked SIM card. Yep.
There, you know, it's unfortunate in that situation. What's really nice about the modern smartphones, and this is something you might want to consider going forward, is with an Android or an iPhone or something like that, you can, when you save your contacts, they're all saved to your Gmail account or your actual mail account, so that when you get a new device, all of your contacts are in the cloud or on your Gmail, and so they'll come down to your new phone. I always had worries and concerns about storing stuff on the phone or on the SIM card. But let's see.
Go ahead. It's the low-tech way to do it, if Jay was going to chime in on how to get into the SIM card, there are some SIM card readers where you can actually get all the data off there. That's kind of around and about the point. One thing you can do is you can request old phone bills. If people had actually called you on that number, if you hadn't just like programmed the numbers in straight, you can. I've had to recover phone numbers by getting old phone bills and saying, okay, this is probably this person, that's probably that person.
That's kind of
monotonous.
I had just recently received the contacts, but I wasn't able to use them just yet.
You can get a SIM card reader that will allow you to connect the SIM card to a USB port on a computer, and then there's software tools that you can use to try to recover the data from it, but it's kind of hit and miss. It's not something I've done in a long time. I did this to get into a phone to get some images off of it a while back, but it takes a pretty dedicated person to sit down and really try to get that data. I mean, you can play with it. I'm trying to see if there's a... I wonder if someplace like, what's the company that, you know, like for data recovery? OnTrack data SIM card. Let's see if they do SIM cards. Mobile device data recovery. Kroll OnTrack is a company that does data recovery, and it looks like they also will get data off of a SIM card, but you can contact them. They're not cheap. I've used them in the past to recover data off of a failed hard drive, but you might see if they have a tool or if they have a service where they offer that if you want to try to recover those.
Because they sent me to a few places. They even sent me T-Mobile
a dedicated data recovery service. OnTrack is, that's what they do. They do okay. Data recovery of all kinds. They could get, so I would check with them. You could go to, it's just do a search on Kroll OnTrack, Kroll, second word, OnTrack, OnTrack, and just contact them. At the very least, they can tell you whether or not they can do it.
Okay.
And give you an estimate on what it would cost to recover that data.
So just OnTrack data recovery?
Like I said, Kroll OnTrack, Kroll, first word, Kroll, Kroll, second word, OnTrack, OnTrack. Or you can just do a search on OnTrack Data Recovery, and you'll find their site. They're based in the UK, but you can mail them the card. But you talk to them first, see if it's a service they offer. But then if it looks like something you want to proceed with, you send them the card, they'll recover the data. They'll tell you how much it's going to cost and send it back to you.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Good luck.
Great. It'd be worth it.
If those contacts are going to make you some money, I want to get them off there.
Yes, it will.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
I have a short question.
Okay.
I haven't had that many phones. My understanding was a SIM card was in a GSM phone. So is a SIM card in a CDMA phone something different? Is it just a small memory device? Because GSM phones are the ones that have SIM cards that have the connection. You can take the SIM card out, put it in another phone.
Yeah, so the radio, like when you get into like CDMA or GPRS or GSM or whatever, that's separate from the SIM cards. The SIM card subscriber identity module or something. So, you know, back in the day when you'd buy a phone, you'd have the ESN and you'd have a couple things air soldered into EEPROMs onto the phone to where you couldn't actually transfer that phone. Like this phone is always going to have that the electronic serial number. And the stuff associated with it.
So like all CDMA is still like that.
Yeah,
well, except in part of Asia.
Yeah. So
actually have SIM cards for CDMA networks, but most CDMA phones, it's permanent. You can't like a GSM, you can change your SIM, you can move your phone number around.
Yeah. So with the subscriber identity module, all it does is it's got a little bit of a non-volatile memory on there. And it's got stuff like, subscriber's number. It's got a unique code. And then you can, if you want to, before phones had memories, you could actually store, like, back in the day, I think it was like 30 text messages on a SIM card.
Right.
Like maybe 99
Which I had an AT&T phone that had a GSM SIM.
Yeah.
But I never had a CDMA phone that had a SIM card. So I was wondering.
iPhones do.
Yeah, they do. You can...
Yeah, but that's only in recent time when they combine CDMA and GSM on the same phone. And the SIM card is probably for GSM, not for CDMA, right?
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean,
I didn't think it was coupled with the radio.
That's why I was asking. I don't remember any CDMA phones having a SIM card because the SIM card, it did have a little bit of memory on it. But I thought it was for GSM and it was the identification for the phone number. So you could take the SIM card out and move it to another phone. But you couldn't do that with CDMAs because they were burned onto the phone. You had to get the phone company to actually switch it to a different CDMA.
It's not. Here's the deal: it's not based on CDMA or GPRS or GSM. It's just that for whatever reason, I'm finding an article here is that the early makers of the handsets didn't think it would be a good idea to put something that you could remove and take from phone to phone. So that same piece of information that's on a SIM card was actually air soldered onto an EEPROM and put in the handsets
for CDMA.
For CDMA,
but not for GSM.
Probably
because
not.
GSM, yeah. you can pull them and I do.
Well, there were some hardwired GSM phones back in the day. Like I had one of the first ones that came out. You couldn't actually move or go anywhere.
Oh, okay.
We've got a couple of calls, I guess. Yeah, not too much time.
SIM cards. All right.
I was just curious. I knew they could store some stuff, but I didn't. I've personally seen a CDMA phone.
I've seen it on my phones. When I had a Windows phone, the option was you could save it to the phone or you could save it to the SIM.
Right.
What
carrier were you on?
It was on T-Mobile.
T-Mobile is a GSM.
Right.
That doesn't count.
I had it on Verizon. I've got SIM cards on Verizon.
But recently, a long time ago. The point is that this caller had a phone with a SIM card, and he wrote it to the SIM, and the SIM is locked, and he needs to get the data off of it. So I don't know.
I'm just saying, calls before Root House, who's next? Short. All right, up next in the show, we're going to speak with Andrew.
Andrew, you're on the air with the Sim Show.
I have just a quick question, which y'all would suggest. I'm interested in learning about server maintenance in IT, and I was just kind of curious about where you think I should start learning about all that information.
Well, it depends on what kind of servers you want to maintain. Do you want to maintain Windows servers, or do you want to maintain Unix servers?
Unix.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could build one.
Download some distros, get some computers or virtual machines, install the distros, and start maintaining them.
I mean, the book that is kind of the definitive book for Linux, there's a book from O'Reilly. It's called Linux System Administration. It's probably like in its fifth or sixth edition. It's got like a pioneer-looking dude on the front with like a maroon cover. That'll walk you through everything from, like Flicked said, installing the system all the way to managing all the different services. Because really, I mean, the Linux server, it's pretty simple. It's when you start adding, like, well, what do I want to do? I want to run DNS and a web server FTP and bind and FTP.
But I don't recommend the O'Reilly one that's got the Armadillo on it. I don't think that's a very good system administration book.
Is that in a nutshell, or which one
is
that?
No, it's the system administration book.
I like the one with the Pioneer.
That's the Linux-specific one.
But are these things he can read to learn?
Yes.
I mean,
yeah,
can he get a job if he reads this book?
You buy the book, you get a piece of hardware, you install the software, you go through it, and you teach yourself how to do it.
My personal favorite is there's a book called the Unix Administrator's Handbook, which used to just be Unix. They made a Linux version, then they combined Unix and Linux.
To answer Groovehouse's question, if you some places, if you can go in and speak intelligently to system administration of Unix, and they've got an existing system Unix system admin who can verify what you're saying is true, yes, you could get a job doing that.
Excellent.
And,
or
and chances are, because Unix system administration is still relatively esoteric when it comes to system administration, if you demonstrate a reasonable amount of skills to be able to do that, you could probably get a job pretty quick.
Excellent. If you practice it long enough that you have a big bushy beard and a crazy look in your eye, you can get a job.
Learning about just kind of doing it as a hobby before I like really go out and look for a job.
That's the best way. Get some hardware, get a book, and do it. Anyway, we got to let you go. We're running out of time.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for your call. Have a good night.
You too.
All right. Last call we're going to take. It's going to be Michael.
Michael, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hey, guys. Quick question about my iPhone 4 and iOS 8. I see that they're cut off as a 4S.
Yep.
And I read a blog on the internet a day or two ago said, throw your iPhone 4 away. I don't go to porn sites or anything like that. Do I really need to throw my iPhone 4 away? It's a perfectly good phone.
Why would you go to porn? What is porn site?
I don't think you'd have to throw your iPhone 4 away. Unless you want to stay on the most recent version of the OS. But
The most recent, I've got 7.1.1. I think they.
Does your iPhone 4 continue to make phone calls and deliver to you the services that you need from a smartphone?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's working fine.
Yeah, there's no need to throw it away.
Okay. Second question then, if I could, about this shell shock thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know all the stuff that you guys know, but my wife and I just got her a new MacBook Air.
Yeah.
296 gig. Drive, and I've got a MacBook Air with 128 gig drive.
Are you running Mavericks?
Pardon me, sir.
Are you running the Mavericks operating system?
I was going to ask you about that. She got hers with Mavericks. I bought mine in Pueblo, Colorado, in February, and it shipped with the latest Mountain Goat, whatever. but they say that they'll install Mavericks for free. Should I do it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Do it.
Okay, great.
And
are you all still running around without any pants on?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Just Jay.
Thank you very much for your time, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your call.
Jay's pantless tonight.
It's
his turn to be pantless.
Groovehouse is thinking about me without pants. You know, I may have not flown with my Quisp beanie, but Groovehouse is coming on to me. Strong. And the show's over. All I
you started
put
it.
My laptop. You started it.
You started it.
Turn this thing. I'm going to turn this radio station around. There won't be any Technology Bytes for anyone. All right. Well, we're really glad that you guys tuned in. I'm really glad that these guys are here in the studio. I'm glad that Pete was on the phone and the Skype from San Antonio. I'm just grateful. November's coming. I got to practice being grateful.
Geek Gathering.
Geek Gathering this Friday. Thank you for the reminder, Flicked.
This Friday.
Who are going to... Who's going to be there? Are you going to be there, Groovehouse? Are you a maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe. Bring that girlfriend of yours. She
maybe.
Seems nice.
Maybe.
You behave better when she's around.
Maybe.
All right. All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bytes. You can have more Technology Bytes Friday at the Geek Gathering. Go to geekradio.com to learn more. We're going to get out of here. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Hey, Groovehouse.
Hey.
Give me my pants.
Hey, forget about it.
Kick off your weekend at Discovery Green at the Sounds Like Houston Thursday Concert Series presented by Green Mountain Energy. Join 90.1 KPFT FM every Thursday night through October 23rd for free, family-friendly outdoor concerts at Discovery Green. Dance, sing, and chill on the hill to tune from renowned and dynamic performers. Fall series headliners include Rodney Crowell, the Jones Family Singers, and T-Bird and the Breaks. The Thursday, October 2nd concert features two of Houston's most popular touring bands, Buxton and Wild Moccasins, in a rare double bill. We'll flip a coin at 6 p.m. to determine which band goes first, so make sure you get to Discovery. Discovery Green early for all of the fun. Concerts begin at 6:30 every Thursday night. Blankets, pets, picnics, and lawn chairs are welcome. Beer, wine, grilled corn, and other tasty bites are available for purchase at the Lake House. Most street parking is free starting at 6. For more details and a full lineup of the Sounds Like Houston Thursday concerts at Discovery Green, presented by Green Mountain Energy Series, please visit discoverygreen.com.
Do you or someone you know own a local dining establishment? KPFT has a pledge drive coming up. And each drive, restaurants in the area feed our phone volunteers who give of their time to help KPFT reach its goals. Donations of food by these establishments are tax deductible and help community radio in the process. We also thank your establishment on air. Call 713-526-4000 for more information on how Houston eateries can lend a helping hand to KPFT. Ideal locations will be close to downtown Houston and be able to provide meals for 12 hungry volunteers. Again, that's 713-526-4000 for more information. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpfthouston. We'll be right back.